Hi and welcome to the Island Library. I'm Jodie from Pages of the Moon.
And I'm Laura from Laura Liz Buckley.
And welcome to episode 14 of our podcast.
Can't believe we're at 14.
Neither can I. For those who are new to this podcast, I will be going first and I will be saying the name of my book, the author and the blurb. I will then hand over to Laura, who will then do the same. And then I will take the microphone back and I will give my pitch. Then we will go into a discussion about the book, trying to keep it as spoiler-free as possible. Then at the end, I will give my seashell rating, which is out of 5 seashells. And then Laura will ask me if I want to take it to my island library, which then I will reveal. And then I will ask Laura if she would be interested in reading this book before handing over to Laura, who will then give her pitch, her breakdown of the book, minus spoilers, seashell rating, and then I will ask the all-important question. Then at the end of the podcast, we come over to Jo's random question of the week, which I have prepared already.
Very organised.
So that is the general rundown of our podcast. If you are new, also, we have a Patreon called the Island Library where you can help support us in upgrading some of our software, which you have already been able to do. Thank you to our current subscribers. We have 3. We have gone up in the world. And we now have a website called theislandlibrary.com where we'll be launching something new and exciting very, very soon.
So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Yes. But anyway, for this week, I read Meet Cute by Helena Hunting. What did you read?
I read Love Boat Taipei by Abigail Hingwen.
Oh, I've not heard of that book.
Has it? Gorgeous, gorgeous cover.
That is a very, very gorgeous cover. I can't show you the exact cover of mine because I read it on Kindle this week, but I do have a picture up. I think there's various different colour pictures.
That's sweet.
The one on Kindle that I had is yellow, but I have seen a paperback version that's a very soft lilac colour. So I'm just going to read the blurb for this book before I hear Laura's blurb. Talk about an embarrassing introduction. On her first day of law school, Kaylin ran quite literally into the actor she crushed on as a teenager, ending with him sprawled on top of her. Mortified to discover that Daxton Hughes was also a student in her class, her embarrassment over their meet-cute quickly turned into a friendship she never expected. Of course, she never saw his betrayal coming either. Now, 8 years later, Dax is in her office asking for legal advice. Despite her anger, Kaylin can't help feeling sorry for the devastated man who just became sole guardian to his 13-year-old sister. But when her boss gets wind of Kaylin's new celebrity client, there's even more at stake than Dax's custody issues. If she gets Dax to work at their firm, she'll be promoted to partner. The more time Kaylin spends with Dax and his sister, the more she starts to feel like a family, and the more she realises the chemistry they had all those years ago is as fresh as ever. But will they be able to forgive the mistakes of the past, or will one betrayal lead to another?
Wow, it sounds like there's a lot going on there.
There's a lot to unpack in this book. Yeah, for sure. There's a lot going off, but we'll get into that a little bit later.
Yeah, sure. Okay, the blurb for Love Boat Taipei, where the party never stops. Whenever Wong's parents sent her away for the summer, she's expecting to attend a strict educational program in Taiwan. Instead, she finds the infamous Love Boat, a free-for-all where hookups abound, adults turn a blind eye, and the nightlife runs non-stop. Will Love Boat give Eva the courage to pursue the future she dreams of? To become who she wants to be? One thing's for sure, this will be a summer she'll never forget.
Ooh. Sounds like the Love Boat is the place to be.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, kind of want my own Love Boat. So, here is my version of a pitch for Meet Cute by Helena Hunting. That's me preparing my paper. Lawyer Kaylin is trying her best to forget crush and college rival and childhood actor Daxton until he enters her office with his parents as they set up a trust fund for their daughter. Next comes tragedy, then comes love, and then comes a lot of confusion and moments you'll struggle to put down. If you're a regular listener to this podcast, you'll notice that I will take something extremely lengthy of a blurb and just cut it down.
Yeah.
I've realised that a 30-second pitch is not something that I tend to do. I do about 12 seconds, mainly because I know that my attention span for blurbs is very short.
Sure.
Because I am a self-professed judger of book covers. So I don't tend to read the blurb unless something catches my eye on the front of the book. And normally it's like a quote or something like that. For me, this book was actually the title of the book, which immediately pulled me in. And I didn't really read the blurb so much as just skim it and just kind of think, yeah, this is what I think it's going to be. However, probably got really loud there. The plot wasn't really where I thought it was going to go. Now, obviously, I'm going to give this a spoiler breakdown. A spoiler-free breakdown. I apologise. So I can't just tell everything about this book. So I won't say the specifics of why it didn't go where I thought it was going to go. I'll just talk about the main points of what I think a meet cute is. So a meet cute is when you meet cutely, and it's quite a funny story. And how I envision it is like a story you don't ever feel will become embarrassing when you tell it to your kids or your grandkids, etc., etc. Now, this meet cute happens before the book even starts. So there's a prologue to this book, which I found quite odd for a romance book to start with. But I read it and I digested it. And that is what's actually in reference to the blurb. That's actually what happens in the prologue. So most of that blurb about the university slash college, because it's American, happens in the prologue.
Right.
And the first chapter actually starts when Kaylin is at the law company. So it's like 8 years after. So it was very bizarre from reading the front and reading the meet cute had already happened.
Right.
So like it wasn't more a meet cute as more of just a general romance set after a meet cute. So that's why I didn't think it was going to go the way I thought it was going to, because of the cover. The cover is also two people sharing a milkshake, which at no point happens in this book. Which I thought was also really, really odd. I'm not saying that book covers tend to need to reflect what's in the book, but something in a romance like such as that, as two people sharing a milkshake or a drink, in fact, usually does happen in the book, and that didn't happen. So whether that was something that was initially in the book and then got cut out, I'm not 100% sure, but it just wasn't there, and it just baffled me a little bit. There are some really, really cute moments in the book, but there are also some equal moments that I didn't really enjoy. So I'm just going to go over some of the things that I did really enjoy first before I go all negative Nancy. For starters, it was really easy and it was really fun to read. I read it in a day. It's not complicated. It's cute, but unfortunately that's really it. Like, if you're after a cute romance, that's it. It does tackle some emotional moments, but I don't feel it does justice of the moments it's picking up, and I'll get a little bit more into that later because it comes more in the negatives. But it was just a cute romance that just developed over time, and maybe my expectations for romance are quite high at this point because I do read a lot of them. I also came from a fan fiction background before I got into writing my own novel, which also happens to be a romance, so maybe my expectations are quite high for what I expect initially from a romance. That's for you to judge yourself when you're reading it, whether I'm just under, like, downgrading it. But I just found that it was just cute and we all knew what was going to happen. Sometimes I was a bit unsure about the backstory, as cute as it is them being, you know, they've known each other since college. Obviously there's this big betrayal that happened, and when you find it out, I guess the downside is that I didn't go to university, so I don't understand the importance of what happened. But something happened and it affected her GPA score and lowered it so that she became second in the class over first. Now, the reason I'm saying this is because it comes up quite a lot. You find it out about a quarter of the way of the book in, so I admit that that is a slight spoiler on the betrayal part, but I won't say anything else. But it's more because it becomes insignificant. You don't really understand the purpose of it, and unfortunately the backstory just seems to be there to elevate the fact that their relationship develops quite quickly, and I feel like it's like a plausible reason as to why that happens, whereas I think the author could have cleverly managed that in a different way. But that's just my opinion, just from writing myself. I just found that obviously rushing it all in that prologue does negatively impact what Helena could have done throughout the book with the way that she wrote it, because 8 years have passed and people don't tend to stay the same. They make some references in the book as well that, you know, I was an idiot in school, like blah blah, like I've changed so much since then. So then it becomes a little bit boring the fact that they've known each other, if they've both changed, and they both make reference to the fact that they're not really the same people they were. So it kind of makes it insignificant at this point, but it's there. That's when the meet cute happened, and I think because of the book cover and then the blurb, I kind of expected the meet cute to be something that greatly impacted the story. But while it was just introducing them to one another, and then when they do meet each other later on, it just fires Kaylin up, so she's really angry, which then gives us that great-ish enemies to friends to lovers sort of trope that I am such a sucker for. But I don't really feel like they really hated each other. I don't really feel like they had many opportunities to be friends, and then they were just lovers. So, yeah, even though the book's actually not that long and as fun and as easy and refreshing as it is, I did feel at times it was a little long, but I think it's more because it was really spelled out what was going to happen. At each turn, things weren't really that unsurprising. It was just nice. It was just a nice, easy book. And I imagine it'd be perfect for those who are on holiday and you don't really want anything complicated. You want to sit by a pool or sit on the beach or even just be in a caravan, in the Peak District, just wanting to relax and not really think about anything, this will be the perfect book for you because it doesn't involve you engaging a lot of your mind to get through it. It's just nice and just a super easy romance cozy book to read. The downside to this is that, as I've already mentioned, my expectations for romance at this point is quite high. And at times I just felt myself a little bit frustrated with reading it, wanting a little bit more. Now, don't get me wrong, the characters are brilliantly fleshed out. So we see Kaylin really grow into herself. We see her have these moments with Dax where she's a little bit unsure of herself and she does stand up to him. But who she is lawyer-wise is somebody who is really somebody Dax then can admire. But also, as the reader, you tend to admire her and her strength and her knowledge and the way that she sort of controls a situation. Is something really to applaud her for. And Dax, obviously, he's a tragedy strikes. It's pretty obvious from the blurb, so it's not really a spoiler, but unfortunately his parents are in a really bad accident. They both pass away very early on in the book, which is why he gets sole custody over his 13-year-old sister, who's called Em. I call it in my head, but it might be Emmy. It's spelled E-double-M-E.
Okay.
So in my...
I probably have pronounced that M in my head, if that helps.
Yeah. I just know that if you put an S where the second M is, it'd be as...
Esme.
Yeah.
No, the first.
Yeah, I meant the first. I got a bit dyslexic then, sorry. But if I put the S in the first M, it'd be Esme. So I'm just going to say, if I'm saying it incorrectly, please let me know. But I'm going to call her M for the purposes of my breakdown. Of the story, not my breakdown. I can't say her name right.
I just don't know how to say her name.
So Dax becomes the sole guardian of his sister, much to someone else in the family's dismay. I won't really go into that because there isn't a lot of plots, so I don't really want to give a lot away. But anyway, he really grows into that. Obviously, he struggles. You know, he's like, I think he's late 20s, maybe early 30s. I'm not 100% sure on the ages because I don't think it's really mentioned in the book. If it was, it wasn't to the point that I really gravitated towards their age and knew it. But just generally picking up from the style of the book, it's an adult book, so I knew that they had to be of a certain age and they'd already been through college, that's university, and then they've got quite a good job. So I assumed late 20s, early 30s at the latest. But he does step into that role really quickly, and you know, the ups and downs that his character has to go through in dealing with a 13-year-old is really brilliantly handled. And I thought it was a really nice progression of his character from what we see from the prologue into what we end up with at the end. So the character development, I thought, was, you know, there was very little for me to really give any comments on. I thought it was really well handled. The only character that I did struggle with was Em, because it's probably quite hard for me to say how a 13-year-old should act, because A, I'm 28. The other thing is that I wasn't a typical 13-year-old, so I don't really know what a 13-year-old should be like. But I struggled at times to understand her behaviour in situations. Obviously, she'd been through a really traumatic situation with losing her parents, so I did give leeway. But sometimes some of the things that she said, I was like, would she say that? And I'm just not 100% sure on her characterisation, because I just feel like sometimes she was made slightly more immature, and then in the next breath she'd be slightly more mature. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a point in the story where Kaylin points out to Dax that his kid sister might be wearing thongs because, you know, she's 13. But also at the same time, she's somebody that doesn't really wear makeup, doesn't seem like a character that really cares a lot about her appearance. So then it's kind of hard to understand what kind of 13-year-old she is without this loss.
Sure.
So it's kind of like she becomes quite a main, I'm doing that in little fingers, little bunny ears. She's like a main secondary character, and yet we know very little about her, but she's the purpose of why these two lovebirds are working together so much. So it's kind of like I don't need to know who Em is as a person, like her deep inner thoughts, but it'd be nice to kind of know what makes her this 13-year-old that needs so much looking after, to the point that Dax can't leave her on her own. you know, he can't work, like, he needs to pick her up from school. And again, I was a very different 13-year-old. And at 13, I was trusted to go home and let myself in. I don't know if that's legally okay, but I mean, I thought it was. And my mom gave me a house key and I would walk home from school. And yes, I would ring her. I'd miss call her off the house phone so she knew I'd got home okay. Because otherwise, you know, who even knows?
Yeah.
But I was allowed to go home. I was allowed to use appliances. Just wasn't allowed to, you know, be ironing my t-shirts until she got home. In case I burnt myself, not the house down. So it was that sort of thing that I wasn't 100% sure of. But again, we don't know this. I didn't really get a sense of the setting. I don't know if he was in like a neighborhood that maybe his kid sister being at home would be something that other people would frown at. It's not really explained very well. So it just made her characterization difficult for me to understand. So then at times when she was being discussed or she was speaking, I found that I rolled my eyes a little bit. So that's something that did bother me, but it might not bother other people because they might not be that bothered. It was a weird style that I'm not 100% sure that I'm sold on, but that's, again, just a personal thing, but just for anyone that really likes deep descriptions when it comes to a romance book. I'm not talking like it's strung with loads of metaphors or anything like that, but everything was always explained. It wasn't really described. I wasn't ever shown anything, I was told. And the only times I really delved into finding some descriptive language was unfortunately when they was removing clothes, which I think actually might be a strong point for the author. I had a look at some of her previous work and I'm not judging a book by its cover necessarily, but it just seems that more racier romance. I would say it's still adult, but it's not quite erotica, but I feel like that might be a strong point because it seems like the author really hit her stride when they were like getting a little bit more romantic with one another.
Right, okay.
I will give credit though to Helena that she grew the romance quite gradually and naturally, I would say, for saying that they're working together, and Kaylin does bring up that they need to be quite respectful because they're both there for M. And at first I was like, yeah, that does make a lot of sense. I mean, it would have made more sense for her to be professional and to say, I need to be professional. But, you know, that's just my taking from it. Obviously, I'm not the one that's staring at my childhood crush, so I don't know how I would act. But I did think it was quite gradual. I just think it got elongated a little bit too unnecessarily. And then it kind of got rushed a little bit and then elongated again. And it just felt very choppy, long. And I feel like I'm being a bit mean, but I feel like maybe somebody who reads a lot of romance should have been a really strong beta reader for this, because I feel like they would have said, I think this bit you can get rid of, but this bit, like, let's get really into this. But I think maybe this is just Helena's style, and the style just wasn't for me, because it did seem like it matched well with her writing. It just didn't sit so well with me. So I'm thinking it might all be a very personal thing, and other people might find it absolutely adorable. It just wasn't for me. I will say the ending though was a chef's kiss. I did really like the ending, and it did sort of like round everything up. And I will say, overall, I know I've been a little bit negative on it, overall it was quite an enjoyable book. You know, like I said, I wouldn't have got through it if I really struggled with it. And it was super easy and it was cute in moments. There's this line which can be taken either way depending on what kind of reader you are, but he's like, Dax is really close to her like face, and he's like, what do you want, Kaylin? And then she's just there like, to be kissed, and then he kisses her, and I was like, oh my god, that's so spoony. But there are also some moments where like the line sort of goes a bit weird and you're not 100% sure where each of them are. So it's like when she's discussing the thong situation with Dax, Kaylin like brings up the fact that she's like, have you ever seen lines on any of the pencil skirts that I wear? And it's like, now you're just trying to find out if he's checking out your ass. And obviously he is, because the book is told from both their points of view. So they intercross each other,
okay,
which I thought was really interesting. But then I'm just a bit like, sometimes I don't really want to be in his head.
Oh, really?
Sometimes he is just checking her out. And I'm like, okay, you have responsibilities, man. Get a grip. But it was actually something that did really warm me with the story. It was nice to see him untangling a little bit, and it was nice to see a man not be completely comfortable in their environment, and him taking the situation very seriously, and not just through Kaylin's point of view, but in his own. So when we're in his head, even if it is being told to us and not described to us, he is taking the situation so seriously, and he does really care about his sister.
Aww.
And I thought that was really, really nice to see, and a great choice by the author on his character. And like I said, going back to the characters, it was really, they were really fun to be with. And I think for anybody who just wants a really nice book that they can just read and light a candle and just unwind, this will be the perfect book for you. And, you know, if I wasn't such a romance reader and if I wasn't a romance writer myself, I probably wouldn't have been so negative about this in different aspects. Mm. It's just because I do set the bar so high. So at least you know that my recs are going to be really, really good. But saying that, in a round-off way, I did really, really enjoy this book. And my teething problems with this book are so minor compared to the things that I loved.
Okay.
And I wish I could talk a lot more about the things that I did love, but unfortunately they are plot-based. And I'm really trying to keep my star.
You've done really well.
I'm doing so well. I'm smashing life right now. And I'm just having a look to see if I've got anything else, but I don't think I do. I thought it was really nice that Kaylin was a lawyer. And I thought it was also nice that Dax was also a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
But they also, there's a nice moment at the end where that sort of comes into play. And you think is good. You think a bad thing's going to happen. And you're just going to have to wait to see if it does. But I will tell you that my stomach knotted.
Oh.
And I won't tell you what then happened to my stomach. Because I will leave that for your imagination.
Oh, very good, very good.
So I'm just going to...
I have a couple of questions if you're...
Yes, I'm just checking that I covered something. Yes, so just the last thing that I wanted to say about her characterisation in terms of Kaylin was that there's a small moment where I feel she isn't herself, and I will say that now because I know that I've really applauded her character. And even though she makes the choice that she does, I actually really commend the author for doing that, because as much as a woman can be strong, sometimes they also need to choose more than themselves. And that is all I will say on it, just because I know if there's any feminist readers that are listening to this and they do pick up this book and they read it and they read this particular section and think, oh my god, Jodie said that she was a really amazing strong character, blah, 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 blah. I note this section, and as somebody who is a feminist, I actually understood and applauded the reason why she made the decision that she does. And I just wanted to make a note of that, just in case. I actually think it goes more for her character than goes against.
Okay. So one thing that I wanted to ask about was, because you mentioned about how it felt quite long sometimes, and I was wondering whether you think that had, so whether that was to do with pacing, and something you said about it feeling like choppy at points made me wonder if maybe it might be pacing, or do you think it was because you, the other thing you said about it being not that interesting to you in some parts, or do you think both or something else entirely?
I think it's both, but at different opportunities. So there's a small part just before they sort of begin the more romantic part of their relationship. And the problem with the pacing, and it's not really a problem, but what I mean to it, further explain the question, is that sometimes it skips a lot of days and you get told that. But I think in the grand scheme of things of this romance and of this book, you don't get that feeling that time has passed. You're told that days are passed,
mm-hmm.
but nothing in the outside changes. So you know that clever thing that authors do when they say, so a week's passed since the last time I've spoken with Dad, and you know the next time I do speak it's throwing it down with rain or something. It brings that outside in, so then you get a good pace of time from that. So then your pacing sort of, you start to imagine what could have happened in between all of that. The downside to this is that this book only tells you that time has passed. You don't have any significant moments that break up that pacing except the time that you're told. There's no birthdays that happen. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just
right,
this,
okay.
there's a tragedy that happens, and the only other thing we get is a prom. So M's got a prom later on in the book, and it's something she mentions a few times. That's it. That's our time period to work with. So from the tragedy to the prom, we're told it was a couple of days later. It was a week later. The next night. So then
right.
your pacing feels off, because already there's these things happening, but there's no other feeling other than those things. So sometimes when you're reading, it can feel like it was the next day or it was an hour later, because you forget that initial sentence because nothing else is happening around you. And that's what I mean about the writing being more explaining than describing, because when you describe, you do say a lot of what's going off around.
Mm-hmm.
You will explain the room that they're in. And while it was nice sometimes to not get what the wallpaper looks look like. Sometimes it's nice to know what the wallpaper looks like, so then you can set them and you can place them in a point of time.
Yeah.
That's different. The other thing is there's not a lot of locations within the booklet mentioned, so there's not a lot even for that when you're trying to place them. And then there is the slight fact that at some points I did just think, oh, for God's sake, just get together already. But that's just, that side of it might be more personal to me because I've read so many romance books at this point. I'm like, right, I know they're going to get together, so let's just get together already.
Sure.
And let's get all the nice gushiness, because that's what I like. I like the awkward romance part. And I think that's sometimes what negatively impacted the book, was the explaining and telling me and not describing does make it hard for me as a visual reader to understand where the characters are. It's like, you kind of want the seasons to change.
Yeah, no, I get
just
that.
Just so you can get an idea of what's going on, and unfortunately you don't really get that. I mean, thankfully, Kaylin's pencil skirt numbers do get mentioned quite a bit from Dak, so we know that she changes clothes, but we don't necessarily know if it's always sunny wherever they are or not.
Okay, thanks. That sounds interesting. At least we know that she's changing clothes. That's good info to have.
Yeah, it's nice to know that she's not a tramp.
So my other question is in a slightly different direction, which is, so obviously you mentioned, and I mean, I'd kind of picked up from the context in the blurb, the information that obviously his parents must die if he's taking on guardianship of his younger sister, or like, if not die, then be completely incapacitated. Does it deal at all with his feelings around what happens to his parents? Because that seems like the kind of thing that could potentially really overshadow a romance, but on the other hand, if it's not dealt with at all, it might feel really weird. So I'm assuming the author handled it okay because you didn't mention it, or no, you're pulling a face, so maybe not.
So I feel like from Em's point of view, everyone was very respectful, and her feelings and her emotions came up quite a lot in terms of the plot. Again, it's really hard to explain what I mean, so I am sorry for being really cagey about that.
It's fine.
With his feelings, at the time the accident happens and the information is relayed to him, we do get an emotional sort of outburst and we get a few emotions from him. He sort of feels quite blindsided and he doesn't remember getting from the bathroom to his friend's car to the school because he wants to be the person to tell Em. He doesn't want that information to come from somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of breakdown, and then her breakdown of finding out, that's handled really well. The problem is that there's another situation that's at play, and I feel like his emotions shift because of the other storyline that's at play. The main storyline then gets woven through.
Okay.
And obviously we find out that, you know, he's obviously after law advice from Kaylin, which is why she's come into it. And obviously something lawful is going off. That's all I will say. But I think that sort of shoehorns in and sort of redirects some of his feelings to the fact that he then goes into full protective bear mode of Em. So he feels like he has to take over this huge responsibility and handle it really well 100% of the time, pretty much like a single parent would do. And I feel like it's only at small moments that his then emotions are allowed to poke through from the tragedy that's happened. But I feel like post the last chapter of this book, he would probably then have to deal with his emotions because he feels a lot calmer and the initial thing is sort of resolved slightly and pieces of the puzzle fall into place a little bit more, so he can take that break to deal with himself. But in answer to your question, it's not really handled because I don't think it's appropriate for him to really handle it.
Sure.
Which is why I didn't want to comment on it, because
okay,
the situation at play doesn't allow the author really a leg to stand on, because I think if he did start dealing with it, then it would be taking away from the other thing that's happening. So I think she made the correct call in how she handled that situation. But we did get some emotional outbursts from Anne, so we were reminded that, you know, this horrible thing has happened, which I think was really well done. So
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that sums up what I wanted to know. Thank you.
In terms of seashell rating, I was a little bit torn because I know I've been a little bit harsh, but I'm always going to be a little bit harsher on romance books. It's my forte, I feel. It's my little niche. So I'm actually giving this 4.5 stars.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which I knew would surprise you because I obviously went in a little bit. But I did like the book and I did think it was really enjoyable. It was really cute, and in a way, everything on the tin was exactly what it was. I think it was just the cover that threw me, which I think we discussed last week with the cover that threw you.
Yeah, for me it was, the quotes on the cover that I thought made it sound like something that in my eyes, it was not. So I know how you
Which
feel.
Which I think, yeah, so I think the cover for this threw me because the cover directs this sort of Meet Cute being the sole thing, and it wasn't. And I think if the title wasn't Meet Cute as well, I think I would have probably given this book 5 stars. It's the half a star that I've taken off it because it's misleading. The Meet Cute had already well happened by the point of the plot of this book. But the actual plot of the book, I thought was cleverly done. Like I said, the characters for me really stole it. Obviously, I know I'm a little bit iffy on M, but that might be because I don't know what a 13-year-old's like. The 13-year-old might be perfectly in character, it just didn't sit comfortably with me. But that doesn't mean it's wrong. This again is just my opinion. I found the book in places long, but am I just being impatient? I'm not 100% sure. You know, let me know. Did you find it was too long, or did you find it was like just perfect? Yes, I didn't love the writing style, but for me, the characters stole this for me. And the way in which certain things within the plot are handled, which I wish I could say more about, was really cleverly done. And even just following that question that Laura's just asked about, you know, in terms of, you know, is his emotions dealt with? The reasons as to why all of the things happen are explainable, and you can sort of, I wouldn't say excuses, but you can rationalize them and you can understand why each thing has been decided in this book. And I actually really like that. I didn't come away from this book thinking, oh, I really didn't like this. I was actually having to go through it and think, okay, this didn't sit right with me. That's what I'm going to talk about when I do the review, because I just feel like it's fair to give both sides of the coin. But again, with a romance book, it's hard to just, unless you really don't have a romance in it, it's hard not to impress me. I mean, and I thought the build-up was really nice. I thought the thing that always gets in the way was cleverly done, and you could see it coming from a mile off. And yeah, it wasn't a completely original book. It's just another book that can be added to the pile of lovely romances I've enjoyed. And I think, you know, the reason I've given it this many stars is because it did everything it set out to do, and it didn't steer away from it. It didn't take anything away from it. The characters got wonderful development, and it was just a really nice, hearty read that was super quick, and I would like to read it on a beach.
Okay, well, I mean, considering you'd like to read it on a beach, that does beg the question, would you take it to your island library?
Yeah, I definitely would. Oh. I definitely would recommend it for somebody who is going to go on holiday or wants something to read in the bath or some relaxing read, because I feel like that this is that book. This is that book that you want to take on holiday. You don't want something that's really going to get in the way of the holiday. You know, like, you want to be able to read it, put it down, get in the pool, get back out the pool and pick the book up and not really feel like you've lost anything, which is quite hard to do, say, with like a mystery. Like, you're like, oh God, what did he do again? And you have to read back a chapter. But no, I would take this to my island library.
Okay, that does kind of surprise me, but that's so cool. I'll be good to see it there.
Would you fancy reading Meet Cute?
I'm torn. I really don't know. I'm kind of intrigued. It's not grabbing me, and I don't know if that's because romance isn't an automatic sell for me. I've read some romances that I absolutely love, don't get me wrong. But I don't love them so much that I can necessarily forgive the fact that they're very predictable. Now, sometimes I'll just love a romance so much that I won't mind that it's predictable. Or sometimes a romance will do something really clever, you know, in amongst the... Because obviously the arc of a romance is part of the selling point of a romance story. And I totally appreciate that. And I don't expect them to subvert that, because that is going to kind of kill the vibe for people who love romance. But yeah, so it does kind of like pull them down for me in terms of whether I'm willing to put them on the to be read, considering how long my to be read list is. Because I read a romance quite recently, which I really enjoyed, and so I kind of feel like I'm done with romance for a few weeks, and by the time a few weeks have passed, I'm sure you have this, like, there'll be another million books that I want to read.
Yeah, and I, like I said right at the beginning, I came from fanfiction, and even in fanfiction, I wrote predominantly romance. I'm just a massive rom-comist at heart. So I feel like this kind of book is always, I'm going to be so hard on it, but I'm going to be fair to it. Like, if there's loads more things that I hate than I love, then I will score that appropriately. And I feel like the downside sometimes to my reviewing technique is that I want to talk about spoilers and I can't, so I can't explain some of the reasons for the stars. But I completely appreciate that, because I think there's some book genres that even if they grabbed me, I probably wouldn't pick up, just because I know that that's just not my genre stuff. But that was Meet Cute by Helena Hunting. And yeah.
Yeah, cool. Another one for the Ireland Library. That's always exciting.
I will say, though, I think it's going to be one of those closer to the edge sort of books. Sure. Like, I'm taking it because I would like to reread it again. And I know it's going to be really soft and easy to read. But if something really compelling comes along that, you know, unfortunately, Meet Cute might end up with the sharks. I'm just being honest. We're all about honesty on the island.
For the sharks to read it, of course. And enjoy it.
Of course. Of course. Or, you know, have it as a light snack.
Tasty.
Oh, literature.
Okay, so I will pitch Love Boat Taipei now. After all the sacrifices her parents have made for her, giving up her dream of dancing to instead study medicine seems like a small price to pay forever. Or, if not a small price, at least a reasonable one. But that doesn't stop Eva from heading off to the summer program they've packed her off to with a heavy heart. Little does she know, the program is nicknamed Love Boat, and nobody's really there to learn anything, except maybe how to drink snake blood sake and party all night.
Ooh.
I kind of struggled with the pitch because I wanted to bring in something different that the blurb doesn't really mention, which is Eva's dancing. But yeah, that's what I got. So
I liked it. I liked it. And just keep thinking about what the alcohol was.
Oh.
I'm not, obviously, an alcohol enthusiast.
Yeah. So I will try to remember to address the snake blood sake later.
Okay.
In the meantime, though, I'll try and kind of take my thoughts roughly from the start of the book, which is right off the bat, you get a really strong sense of character from Eva, and you know what a big deal that is to me when I'm reading. Sometimes I thought she was kind of overdramatic. It's a first-person present tense story, and some of the comparisons and the descriptions that she used seemed like a lot. But it didn't really annoy me. It just seemed like part of her character, and I enjoyed that there was such a strong sense of who she was and how she thinks, because for me that's like the major selling point of a first-person story, and if it's a bit bland, then I'm like, well, why am I reading from this character's point of view? Why couldn't it just have been third-person? She's got this best friend, Megan, who was really sweet. So this is the friend who she dances with, and she's been trying to encourage Eva to go for what she wants. The book opens with a series of letters that are responses to Eva's college applications, I guess, because, again, set in the US. Mostly rejections and mostly to medical programs. But there is a letter from the Tisch School of Arts from their dance program saying that she's on their waiting list. And then there's an acceptance from another university college to study medicine. But in the first chapter, she gets a letter from Tisch saying, actually, a space has opened up and we're offering it to you. She's already paid the deposit for this other college place to study medicine, but she's a bit like, oh, what do I do? I've got scholarships to this and my parents couldn't afford the fees for Tisch, but if I can apply for a scholarship there, if I can get funding, then maybe I could do that. But she's not even told her parents that she applied for this. As far as they're concerned, she's off on her way to do medicine. So Megan's like, well, you should just tell them. But Megan doesn't really understand the specific pressures that Eva is under as the child of parents who immigrated to the US. They gave up their families. They gave up the lives they knew. Her dad, I think, was trained as a doctor, but he can't practice in the US because he'd have to go through a whole other kind of training to evidence his skills, which he can't afford. It's too expensive. So he works in a hospital. He basically cleans and he has to watch other people saving lives the way he knows that he could. Or, you know, I don't know exactly what kind of doctor he is, but obviously there's a lot of longing there. And that's all being channeled into Eva. He's like, I gave up my dream so that you
can live it for me.
Which is obviously the way to approach raising children, right? Just like live out all of your unfulfilled dreams through them. That's how you do it.
Definitely. I mean, it was my mum's dream to be an author, which is why I'm pursuing it. It wasn't, ladies and gentlemen, it wasn't. Love you, mum.
So yeah, you've got that conflict. In terms of family, so other than the parents, you've got Pearl, who is Eva's younger sister, and clearly the two of them work together to manage their parents, and you get a little fun moment of that where Eva's trying to like hide her letter and Pearl immediately clocks that she needs a diversion. So it's cute. I like that. You get less of a sense of what her parents are like, except for knowing how passionate they want Eva to study medicine. You do pick up other snippets of information and characteristics as the story goes on, but basically her parents loom pretty large for Eva as not obstacles, that makes it sound more negative than it is, but kind of. And of course, so they live up to that by showing up at Eva's dance practice, and basically her mum's found the letter from Tish and being like, you can't do this, you won't make any money as a dancer, you want to be penniless, you want us to be penniless when we're old, no thank you, also we're sending you to Taiwan for the summer and you're going to this educational program so you can learn traditional Chinese characters and get in touch with your heritage. So Eva is gutted, she's going to miss out on one of her last opportunities to kind of dance properly with the people that she's been training with. They're going to be dancing in a parade, but she has to leave I think before that. So right, the beginning of the story feels like it's following some pretty well-trod paths. You've got the child of immigrants who wants one thing, her parents want another, she's got a close friend who doesn't get it because the friend is just American and doesn't have that cultural context. Her parents are taking action in an attempt to bring her on board with what they want. So there were some similar themes explored in, I think, the first book I read for this podcast with Frankly in Love. But in that one, that was kind of about what they wanted for him in terms of the partner that he chose, and he had some kind of conflict that he had to work through in terms of like people that he was interested in and the way that his relationships developed. With Eva, she is never that conflicted. Other than her parents' expectations, she would not want to be a doctor at all. Within 15 pages, we know that biology is her worst subject and she feels faint at the sight of blood and can't bear to think about having to spend her whole life in a hospital. And also, she feels at her most alive when she's dancing. So, you know, there's not a lot of internal conflict there, except from the point of view of she can't work out how she could possibly tell her parents that she wants to do this instead, seriously.
Yeah.
So I felt pretty confident in where the story was going. In the first three-ish chapters, I thought like, yeah, okay, I see where we're heading with this. So she heads to Taiwan, she bumps into a hot boy, literally bumps into in the most kind of stereotypical way, pretty shortly after arriving there, and she meets a few characters. You've got Sophie, who she meets and talks to early on. She's an interesting character. I'll come back to her in a bit. She's kind of the best friend on kind of the Love Boat program. And there is Rick, who is the handsome guy that she bumps into, who is Sophie's cousin. So they're related. And there's another character who we meet pretty early on who's also important, called Xavier. And he is another attractive young man. Right off the bat, there are some very cute interactions and some really interesting ones where Eva sort of starts to settle into the idea that she's surrounded for the first time by people who actually understand her specific context. Other Asian American kids who've grown up with overlapping expectations and situations to hers. So there's one thing where someone comments on her name, which is Eva, which is short for Everett. And so she's like, yeah, I know it's normally a boy's name, but her parents, when they picked it, they didn't have that understanding of the gender divide. But because a lot of these kids have similar backgrounds, they're like, oh yeah, easy enough mistake to make, fair enough. And she's like, oh yeah, of course, you guys get it.
Yeah.
The book does go on to break down some of those similarities, and it does a really good job of illustrating that although there are commonalities in their experiences, obviously not every Asian American experience is the same by any means. And I think in general, okay, no, I'm going to backtrack a bit. I think that's something that this book does really intelligently around issues of race. There are other topics that it doesn't handle with nearly as much sensitivity and nuance, but we'll come to that later. Right, Sophie, her Taiwan bestie, is really odd. She's great fun, you can tell that right off the bat, but she's sort of by turns supportive and patronizing, encouraging and undermining. She sort of serves as Eva's tour guide to the world of Love Boat, and she's the one that introduces Eva to the nickname Love Boat. I actually can't remember what the program is called because they tend to refer to it as Love Boat 90% of the time. It's obviously not it's not officially called Love Boat. I think it's called Chin Tan, but none of the kids call it that. And Sophie is like, oh no, your parents think they've sent you here for the educational program element of it, but no, we are here to party and get laid. And
I can't ask Sophie.
The supervision is nominal at best a lot of the time, and most of the kids are there to just go wild. There's something that I quite like. There's a scene where Eva writes this list of her parents' rules and decides that she's going to set out to break them all, which, I mean, I love that trope, the kind of to-do list, bucket list of rules to break. Here for it. Other things that I enjoyed about the book, it kept surprising me. Not as in like, OMG, I never saw that coming, shock, surprise, but just that pleasant moment when you're reading of like, oh, okay, this is an interesting angle. All right, happy with that. And there were a lot of those moments where I thought it was going to play out in a fairly typical way, and there was just a slightly different spin on it that was enough to stop me from feeling like it was the same book that I've read 100 times before. Eva makes a lot of mistakes, but I think they made sense in terms of her character and her environment. And I liked that you couldn't always tell what was a mistake and what wasn't until too late. So obviously sometimes you saw something coming a mile off and you're like, oh no, this is going to be bad. But there were also things where you thought it was going to go really wrong for her and it didn't. And things where you thought it was going to be fine and it wasn't. So that was fun and definitely kept me on my toes. Also, massive positive was the honest discussions of racism and the various tropes, which range from harmful to irritating, that Asians get lumped with. The fetishization of Asian women, the Western beauty standards around eyelids, though that's referenced very specifically with one character who struggled with that. There's also an acknowledgement of the ways in which they're lucky and the privilege that they do have, particularly compared to the lives of certain of like extended family who still live in Asia, some of whom are very poor and in very difficult circumstances. And so they're kind of aware that there are advantages to growing up in America, even when it means dealing with bigots sometimes and feeling out of place a lot of the time. And I think just all of those conversations were handled in a really interesting way. Things that I didn't like as much or had kind of more mixed feelings about, the plot is high in drama. Now, I didn't actually hate that. I get that these summer programs can feel very intense and heightened. And when you've got a bunch of teenagers living together and drinking every night, things are gonna get a bit out of hand. Even so, sometimes it felt like a lot. And because obviously, one thing that I would say that is good about it, in slight contrast to one of the things that you were saying about the book that you read, is there's a really strong sense of time because it's happening over an 8-week period. On the other hand, because you're very aware that it's happening over an 8-week period, sometimes it's like, really? Really? Already? Guys.
Was it a bit Big Brother-esque in the fact, you know, like when they put them all in a house and then...
That's actually a really good comparison. Yeah, definitely. I think there were moments where it was like, turn the cameras off and send them home. This is too much.
You have only been together for 2 hours.
Seriously.
Get out of the cupboard.
So the next one is one that bothered me more. There is some big plot points and topics that come, relatively speaking, out of nowhere, and I don't think they were handled with the same care and sensitivity as some of the other discussions, and they certainly weren't handled with the level of sensitivity that I would have liked. There's an abusive relationship storyline that appears and disappears within about 10 pages, and I was like,
oh,
when you're just gonna drop that in and then have it swept up, does that need to happen? Also, there's a character who does something completely outrageous, honestly just a disgusting betrayal of trust and decency and possibly the law, and just wasn't really addressed with the kind of severity that I think it should have been. It's not swept up in a handful of pages, but without going into specifics, like the character who's responsible, I don't think they get anything like the consequences or the reaction that I would have had if I'd been in Eva's situation when this happened. And it was a bit weird. And then so as you move on from that, it kind of gets referenced occasionally because it's a big enough deal and there are kind of some lingering after effects. And I'm like, and yet certain things are back to normal in a way that seems a little bit weird. So I'm not going to harp on that any more than I already have, because obviously it's a specific plot point that I don't want to spoil, but it was weird.
Yeah.
So then there are some things that I don't really know how to categorize. So I haven't talked about the romance at all yet. Now,
no.
Oh, I just feel so torn on this. I loved it while I was reading it. I thought the way it played out was really interesting, if overdramatic at points, but like I said, I'm kind of okay with that. In hindsight, there was a lot of poor behaviour on the part of most of the characters as these romance situations developed. Now, I know that people make bad choices, and I've got no issue with that being represented in fiction, but when you've... And I think maybe I'm holding this author to a higher standard than I would some others, because I saw how well she was able to explore the nuance of some elements. But then I'm like, the way these people are treating each other as these relationships develop, that's not something that I would really want teenagers emulating. and thinking, oh, this is the start of a healthy relationship, or this is an okay way to treat somebody. And it's just not really contextualized within the story in a way that I thought was, you know, treated with the same care as the other conversations. There's kind of a love triangle-ish. Maybe a love square. It gets complicated. I'm okay with the complicated. And in terms of the way the relationships play out, it felt very consistent within the story. I don't know whether I'm going to go there with talking about specifics, because there's just, it's hard to know when to stop. And
yeah, especially if there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, there's a lot. Let's just say that there's a lot going on with the relationships, and I thought it was really interesting. I don't want to override that with my hesitations about whether it was responsible or not. While I was reading it, I was 100% invested, and there were several moments where I was surprised or concerned. There was one moment where I was reading and I just let out a completely involuntary, oh no. And my husband looked over and he was like, oh, you're reading. So yeah, I was really invested. I found it really interesting. There were several points where I wasn't sure which direction it was going to go in, which in a love triangle, sometimes that's done in a really artificial way, isn't it? Where, you know, you get a main character who has two people that she likes equally. That's not really what was going on here. It was much more complicated than that and much more interesting than that. So I appreciated that. I just, it's 100% in hindsight. While I was reading it, I didn't have any problems. And as I was thinking about it and thinking it, obviously I wasn't thinking about what plot I was going to share and not share, because I wasn't going to give any of the details, but I was thinking in terms of whether it was like a set of behaviours that felt okay. And mostly the answer was, yeah, without commenting on the specifics of the resolution, I thought most of the plot threads did resolve in a way that made a lot of sense within the story, and I was pleased. I thought it came together in a really satisfying way. The book took some interesting directions, provided a fascinating insight into Asian American culture, and felt like it left a lot of room for the multiple different experiences that are contained within that, which I really appreciated. And I love the way that, although I didn't feel like we got a strong sense of Eva's parents throughout the story, but you did get a sense of some of the ways in which they were more supportive of her than some of the other parents that she spoke to people about, ways in which they were more harsh. And yeah, it was just really interesting seeing some of those balances and seeing her start to see her parents in a new light of like, okay, well, I wish they'd been more like so-and-so's parents and been a bit more open to different experiences for me. On the other hand, at least they were more supportive of X, Y, and Z. And her, I think the story of her gaining a new appreciation for her family and her heritage, she sort of accepts the Chinese part of herself a lot more by the end of the book than she does at the beginning. And she picks up some Mandarin, which is kind of an ongoing thing of people assuming that she speaks Mandarin or forgetting that she doesn't speak Mandarin, and then her slowly kind of getting a bit more familiar with it. It's a nice little touch in terms of her character arc and her self-acceptance and her coming to understand herself better. So yeah, a lot of great stuff and some things that I found tricky.
Interesting. Is this, I'm assuming this book is YA?
Yes, sorry, I didn't say that. No, it's YA. I think they're 18, most of them. So
because of that, do you feel like they're in character for their age? Because obviously it sounds like they deal with a lot of things. Do you think YA is a good age market for some of the things? Obviously, I don't know what some of those things are, but I just thought it was an interesting question to ask.
Yeah, no, totally. I think so. I didn't think it was inappropriate for the age range it was targeted at. I just wish that either the author had not tried to handle quite so many heavy topics or had really committed to treating them all with the same level of nuance and investigating them all as thoroughly.
Yeah.
And I would have totally understood, you know, if the author turned around, if I was speaking to the author, for one thing I would say, flippin' loved your book, read it in a day, couldn't get enough. But also if she was kind of responding to this and saying, well, it's not really about those things, it's about, you know,
XYZ,
ever, yeah, kind of coming to understand herself better and gaining an appreciation of her culture and and knowing what she wants and being confident in that. And I'd be like, okay, so then why use the plot points that you used?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Because I have so much respect for the way some parts of this book were handled. And for others, I just thought, I know, I can see how well you can do this, and you've just sort of not gone there at all with, you know, an abusive relationship, which is a huge thing. And I don't know, it just, oh, and yeah, no, there were just a few things where I was like, we're not going any further than this, okay? Kind of wonder why you brought it up then.
The only other question that I was thinking of was, obviously you mentioned that there was romance within this book, so does it end with a romance, or does it leave that romance behind with the trip?
No, the romance is a going concern at the end of the book.
Okay.
It doesn't end with the summer.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, so when it came to rating this book, I had a really hard time. I feel like I'm being much pickier in hindsight than I was while reading it. But if I'm thinking in terms of would I want to read it again, would I want to have it with me on an ongoing basis, then that's the way I have to think of it. I've gone for 3.5 shells. Mm-hmm. Again, if you'd asked me while I was reading it, it would have been a 4.5 because I was really liking / loving it. But yeah, looking back and thinking about some of the things that I have some hesitancy about, I'm downgrading it to a 3.5, although I think the writing is great. I think the characters are really interesting. And yeah, I'm not going to rehash it all, but for all of the reasons that I've just been babbling about.
I think the other thing, because obviously listening to you and then thinking back to my rating, sometimes it's not rating it in terms of your enjoyment emus, it's rating it in terms of what you expected when you picked the book up,
mm-hmm.
and whether you would pick the book up again. I'm just thinking just more for like the people listening who might be thinking, oh, well, you said you liked all this part about it. But it's not for us when we're rating. It's not so much about that. It's about the bigger picture. It's about how we felt at the end of it, how comfortable we would feel sitting with that rating, but also on the other things and not just in that moment, because we can all sit there and read a problematic book in a day and go, oh yeah, I got through it really quickly, I must have really liked it. But that doesn't mean that you did actually like it.
Mm.
But Laura, would you take this book to your island library?
No, which makes me really sad because I enjoyed it so much while I was reading it, and I think I would enjoy it again. It's just, if I read it again, I'm going to feel uncomfortable about, because when I was reading it for the first time, things would come up and I would be really engaged, and then I would be like, oh, how come that's already over? That's weird. Now, if I reread it,
you'll know.
I'm going to get to those bits and be like, I know that this isn't going to be handled properly, and that's really winding me up.
Yeah.
It didn't in the moment. In the moment, I was in love with the book, but, you know, rose-tinted spectacles are a little bit off, and the honeymoon period is slightly over. But I think it's really well written. I'd love to see, because it's a debut, which I maybe should have said earlier as well, because I think maybe the author will either kind of, I think there's every chance that the author will develop in her approach and either kind of choose to go less shock and awe with the plot points in favor of telling one story in a beautifully compelling way, which she absolutely did in this book, or will kind of say, no, I still want to address those topics, but I want to integrate them with more nuance. So I'm going to be really interested to follow the rest of this author's catalogue as she continues to write, because it's like really engaging story-wise. I don't think I could read it and love it in the same wide-eyed and innocent way that I did the first time. So I'm not going to bring it to the library, to the island library with me.
Which is fair. I think that's fair.
What are your thoughts on whether you would read this book?
I'm a little bit torn.
Mm.
Some aspects really grabbed me, but then the big overarching problems of it, I think, would frustrate me quite a lot just because of how character-based I am. And if those problematic things aren't handled very well, then I feel like that would affect me quite badly. I'm also obviously a little bit hesitant because it's obviously a big thing that you're not wanting to unveil. And I have some concerns about that in just terms of my own, like, sort of trigger warnings. So I feel like I would need to ask that before picking up the book, just because of the discussion we've now had. So I'm a little bit hesitant. So I'm not 100% sure if I would. Maybe further discussion off the recording will determine the answer. But yeah, that's currently where I stand with it.
I will say, just because obviously from a trigger warning point of view, and I know I'm trying to be cagey about exactly what does and doesn't happen, but it doesn't deal with sexual assault. There isn't a sexual assault at any point, which I know it might have sounded like I was going there with some of it, but that doesn't happen in this.
Maybe a little bit more leaning towards reading now then. means that something really bad that happens and I'm really eager to read it. But yeah, I'm just not, those sort of things just don't sit. I don't think they sit well with anybody, but I struggle more so to.
Yeah, no, I know. It's I get you.
But yeah, I'm a little bit torn. I think I need to think about it and reflect on it a little bit, and I think I could properly make a decision. I think it's always hard, isn't it, when we ask that question, because it is a very in the moment. You're not really from the blurb to the pitch to then the general breakdown of the book. It's very difficult, and we also give very different breakdowns because we're both very different readers. So I think it makes it quite hard to make those decisions. So it'd be also really interesting for you lot, lovely listeners, to let us know how you're finding our breakdowns as well. Like, are they intriguing you, or are they making you want to ask more questions? Because sometimes I do want to ask more questions, but I'm allowed to because I'm a co-host. And speaking of asking more questions, leads us lovely into Joe's random question of the week. Still not had an email for a theme tune. Still gotta keep singing. So
maybe they want you to keep singing.
I don't think anyone wants me to keep singing. The listeners are just laughing at me. So this week's random question of the week is, would you rather have a magic carpet that flies or your own personal robot?
That's hilarious. I'll take the flying magic carpet, please.
Yeah, I. Do you know what? Before I found this question, I literally giggled to myself because I was like, right, Laura's going to opt for the carpet and I'm going to opt for the robot. And I knew it. And then I thought, I'm going to write it down on a bit of paper, and I forgot to do it. And then I was going to show up and I was going to like lift it up and go, this is what I guess you were going to pick. Why would you pick the flying carpet, even though I knew you would?
That's a good question, because I think flying would be really fun. That's most of it. I think it would be scary, but it's a magic flying carpet, so I have to assume that if I fell off, it would like dive to my rescue in the way that you always see flying carpets do in cartoons. You're shaking your head. Would it not do that? Does it not care about me? Is it not an anthropomorphized flying carpet? Because that might slightly change. No, I think I still want the flying carpet. I'd like to be.
No, I think I'm assuming it does. I'm assuming it does. It will catch you if you fall. If it doesn't, I will hurt it.
Cheers. I'll probably be squished, but my ghost will be grateful.
Yeah, you'll haunt me anyway, so it's fine. I think we discussed that in a further episode.
Yeah, I think we established that I'll be haunting you if I die prematurely. So it's all good. I'll keep podcasting with you.
Thank you. Both physical Laura and ghost Laura. Thank you very much for your dedication to the Idle Library.
Well, we know that you demand a lot of dedication.
Yeah, you know.
Why would you choose the robot?
I tend to feel like I don't have a lot of time. Me and Laura were discussing this just before the podcast, and I feel like I'm very stretched a lot of the time. And I feel like some of the things that I feel very guilty about, a robot would be able to handle for me, such as washing the pots and also taking my dog out. I feel like the robot...
Seriously?
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like the robot could handle those things, so then I wouldn't feel as guilty. So then I get to do the funner things. So like, if I don't have to take the dog for a walk and the robot takes the dog for the walk, when they both return and hopefully that extra half an hour has allowed me to finish what I needed to do, then I can do the fun stuff with the dog and like play with him, because I don't really get to do both at the minute. It's the boring job or the nice job, and yeah, it's quite hard. So I think the robot. And I'm also quite afraid of heights.
Yeah,
I can get about it on a plane because I don't think about it, and I can marvel out at the world. And I know it's weird because you're so many thousands of miles up in the air, and it's like, well, why are you okay with that? It's weird, like in my brain.
I can see that it would be different.
Yeah, I think it's seeing the ground, seeing how far the ground is, and you don't get to really see that in planes because of clouds. I don't like taking off or landing though. I don't like seeing the ground vanish from me or coming closer to me. I don't like that. That sits really uncomfortably with me, which I think is why I also would never opt for a flying carpet, because there's always going to be a takeoff and a landing. And, you know, also.
I feel like because it's magic, I'm not going to freak out. Like, I have so many dreams where I die in a plane crash. It's a bit weird. And I get very nervous on planes, but I feel like I'd be less nervous on a flying carpet because it's just me and the magic carpet, and it isn't going to malfunction or hit turbulence. Maybe we'll hit turbulence, but like, I don't know, do magic carpets have to deal with turbulence?
I don't questions know if they would
I'd ask.
Turbulence is caused by clouds, isn't it going through like thick lots of air, like air pockets sort of
thing. I think it's a difference in air pressure, I'm assuming.
Yeah, so
the magic carpet probably won't. No, it'll just be like
building level, won't it?
I'm doing a hand motion like a magic carpet to show that it's going to just like sort of wiggle along.
I don't think it'll be able to take that much flight. Like, and also, like, let's ask the bigger question here. Do planes really need to go as high as they go? That's the big only...
asking the big questions.
The Idle Library, now taking
up... Do planes need to go so high? Is that necessary?
Is it because of, like, someone get in touch, let me know. Because generally, I have so many of these sort of base questions that I ask my husband. And ending on that, just like Top Gear used to, and on that bombshell, that was episode 14 of the Island Library podcast. Make sure you subscribe, listen to us on all the networks all the time. Never stop listening to us. And
rate and review and support us on Patreon. Thank you so much to our supporters, and thank you to everyone who listens. We appreciate each and every one of you. And we will see you next week.
See you next week for the joint read.
Yes, which I've already forgotten the title again. Even though you messaged it to me literally like an hour ago.
We will unveil next week, but it is exciting. It's from an indie author.
Yes.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.